I did nothing.
Whew.
Season 5.
That is impressive.
Season 5. Welcome to Season 5 of Best of 5. Coming to Epic Games Store this fall. welcome, everybody, to another episode of Best of 5. My name is Elon. I'm joined here with Steve, Main Squeeze, Ace King, Offsuit, Jurek, hanging out on the mic. What up, Steve?
What is good?
There's a lot that's good.
Not first, on our mic, though.
Yeah. First of all, I think I have to sub too much. But Kwanzai, thank you for resubscribing 31 months in a row, my friend. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Kwanzai.
Man, we got a lot to talk about this week. Announcements were made at 7:31 p.m., a minute after our show ended last week. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about CPT Online and all the crazy shenanigans that went on there. We're going to talk about Animevo's getting more games. We're going to talk about the NG Plus showcase that happened earlier today. Finally, somebody announcing shit before our show, not after. Goddamn. And then we're going to get to an interview with Bestabon later on down the line. But Steve, before we get to all of that, do you want to bring back, for the second week in a row, please, hit us with that recap?
I think we can do that. The Capcom Pro Tour continued. This was the first event on the North American side of things. North America East number one took place this past weekend. This field included over 300 players, some very big names, Smug, Knuckledew in there, Shine, CJ Truth, and IDOM, the man who is already qualified for Capcom Cup, threw his name into the hat, did pretty well for himself, made it to winner's side top 8, and we'll discuss what happened afterwards in a bit. But it, at the end of the day, it came down to Metro M and DR Mandrake. It is Mandrake who got the win, held off Metro M's reset to take the tournament. Mandrake going to Capcom Cup.
Was anybody else cheering for Metro M? Or was it just me? I kind of wanted Metro M to win.
There was a significant portion who was not, unfortunately, for reasons other than his gameplay.
Yep. Well, we can get into that.
He was doing some pretty sick stuff with Vega, though.
Yeah. We can get into that now. So, the big blow up, as it were, was Metro M, who is out of the Maryland area, the DMV area. I'm pretty sure that's around Baltimore. I could be wrong about that. Was, like, a lot of people were complaining about his or her internet connection, the Wi-Fi in the basement mix-up. And so much so that our champion, IDOM, forfeit his match for top 3, or top 4, I'm sorry, to Metro, because he didn't want to play Metro because of the connection issues. Shortly after that, El Chacote, who, by the way, had no problem with his connection when he beat Metro M earlier in the tournament, earlier in top 8, mind you, also decided to forfeit because he didn't want to play Metro M due to their connection. So, is this a problem we foresaw coming? Yes and no. I think I didn't expect people to straight up forfeit their match in top 8. And first of all, actually, before we keep going, I do want to say, like, big shout out to Ringe and Vicious for holding down the mic and keeping things lively while a shitty situation happened. I really very much appreciate them doing what they did, and they killed it. Just want to bring that. But at the end of the day, the big discussion was, should IDOM have been allowed to enter the tournament? So Steve and I disagreed with this. Steve and I disagreed with this on Sunday when this was happening. After a little bit of thought, I have changed my mind. Now, do I disagree harder or do I agree? Who knows? We'll see. But what were you going to say, Steve?
Well, I mean, there are really two issues here. Mm-hmm. One is the forfeiting that happened. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with IDOM, the only prize at stake this weekend was a place in Capcom Cup. Mm-hmm. So IDOM forfeiting, that doesn't change. It's a different situation for IDOM forfeiting versus El Chicote forfeiting, even though they happened back-to-back. That is a separate issue in my mind from whether or not IDOM should have been allowed to enter. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Okay. You were talking. I switched to the one. Season 5, baby. We got new stuff. But, yeah.
I'm getting blown away here.
Yeah, so here's the sitch. As far as so we can talk about the DQing and stuff, blah blah blah. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to talk about IDOM being let in. Now, my argument was, hey, first season of Street Fighter V, Infiltration won like a billion tournaments after qualifying out of final round. Takedo entered and got second place in a billion tournaments after qualifying for final round or qualifying for Capcom Cup, the tournament after. So what's the difference here? And I know what that answer is now, but shouldn't you let IDOM play? What's the harm, right? Granted, now we know what the harm is. So I felt at the time that, you know, it didn't matter whether he entered or not. So what was the big deal? Now, one thing that I did fail to think about was, hold on, let me put myself up on here. Check this shit out. Zoop! We're playing Marvel. One thing I did kind of not think about was the fact that with the in-person tournaments, like Infiltration going to SoCal Regionals, Takedo keeping going to everything, there's money on the line. I just completely forgot about that. I forgot about the world where we play for money. You know, even though they were auto-qualified, you could still go to seedings, blah, 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 whatever. That doesn't matter as much to me, for real. But I think the prize money and and everything else that came with the win kind of ruined my thought process. So I am happy to say that I was wrong. And you know what? We saw the consequences of letting somebody who was already qualified entering the online tournament with no prize money or anything, in the sense that IDOM just gave up and didn't want to play Metro, which brought up a lot of issues. Go ahead, Steve.
Now, to be fair, let's not. I don't want to give the impression that IDOM forfeit or that he didn't play up to his ability, because everything we had seen up to that point showed that he was playing very well throughout the tournament. He was giving maximum effort. He wasn't necessarily, you know, throwing a match just to throw it. He was not alone in having connection issues in trying to match up with Metro M. That said, my position on this is he was in a position where he could have easily done nothing but manipulate the bracket, where he could, you know, it ended up in a situation where someone basically got to walk from loser's quarterfinal all the way to grand final, or loser semi all the way to grand final. It creates the opportunity for someone with bad intentions to cause havoc with the bracket. Obviously, that's not what IDOM did here. He quit for another reason. But the potential is so easily there. And especially in a case like this where there's nothing else at stake. You know, in previous years, those players were still playing for money. Those players were still playing for seeding to improve their place, give themselves a better chance of winning Capcom Cup. Neither of that applies to these online tournaments in this format. So for IDOM to be allowed to compete here doesn't make sense to me. Now, I don't begrudge IDOM. He has a right to play meaningful matches when he can, and as things stand, these are going to be the only real meaningful matches as far as CPT goes for a while. But I just feel like it creates the opportunity for problems that are completely avoidable if you let IDOM or now Mandrake or Phenom compete in future qualifiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, much like you said, I don't blame IDOM for this at all. You know, this is kind of this was Capcom's decision, and IDOM was just doing his thing. But yeah, you know, having, and I don't blame IDOM for the decision he made either, because were I in his shoes, I probably would have done the same thing, to be honest. Where it's like, oh, I'm already in. Do I sit through this laggy-ass match and get frustrated, or do I just, you know, go do my thing? Like, I'd go do my thing, to be honest. I don't need my blood pressure going any higher. Yeah, I don't blame him at all. I did think it was very interesting that El Chacote immediately followed suit in DQing himself, not wanting to play Metro.
Situations were a little different. El Chacote played the first two matches of, or first two games of the match, excuse me, and then forfeited before starting the third one, whereas IDOM basically quit at the end of the first game, or towards the end of the first game. So, slightly different in how it rolled out. But, once that happened, there was a lot of push for another decision that Capcom made, which is banning the grid. The grid being the training stage in the game. Widely reported to be one of the least laggy, or the only non-lag game stage in the game, excuse me. The rules are of the CPT ban the grid, because one of the more common complaints back in previous EVOs and Capcom Cups is casual viewers were seeing everybody playing on a training stage, and they thought, this doesn't matter. This either looks boring, or they didn't think it was an actual match. So they made the decision where everything's got to be on another stage. And that has caused problems. And it sort of set up the situation where you have a rule set up for the viewers, and it comes a bit at the expense of the players.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things where, you know, and it's crazy because there have been a lot of people that have been responding with answers either in support of or against this decision. Things like, I've seen someone say things like, the stage doesn't affect lag, when it actually does. And thank you to Lord Keats, Lord of Netcodes, for explaining that. So there's a bunch of people who have their theories but don't necessarily know how it goes in practice. So, yeah, on paper, it seems like a good idea, right? It's like, oh, everybody's tired of the grid stage. Let's take it out. But in practice, now that we're playing online and now that we're in a completely separate environment, we need at least some form of consistency, or as much of it as we can, right? So I'm hoping that they decide to walk that decision back. I'm hoping they also decide to walk the decision of letting people who've already qualified from playing. keep from playing. But, you know, it's in the hands of Lord Capcom now. So we'll see what they do. They're probably going to announce it at 7:31 p.m. tonight.
Oh, man. I understand why that rule is in place, though. I mean, I've said it a few times. The CPT is effectively an ad for Street Fighter V, for Capcom's games. And they want to put the most appealing product they can forward. So, especially, you know, since Capcom is the one fronting six figures in order to for these players to play for, is this an acceptable trade-off, do you feel? I kind of go back and forth on this.
I don't know. Is anything an acceptable trade-off to anything? Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have an answer.
Yeah, it's one of those things where as we dance on the esports dance floor, we got to kind of find our footing.
Yeah.
I just came up with that analogy, by the way, so if it sucks, I'm sorry.
I'm going to give you a round of applause for that one. I'm sorry, a round of applause. Anyway, sorry, I'm in the host seat, and it was led by Ephraim before, so all the dad jokes are hitting me. It's like an ESP thing. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's always been, like, there's been this weird argument recently where for tournaments, it's always been either, like, what's the optimal experience? Is it the player or the viewer, right? And I think we were, never mind, we'll talk about mine going elsewhere. I think we were reaching a point where people were happy with the balance of viewer to player enjoyment, I think. But yeah, it's hard to say, like, what's taking priority here. I think from Capcom's perspective, I think the viewership is going to be the big priority, right? Because that's like, those are the people who are going to want to spend money on the game. And that's also going to be more people than the players. So it's, I don't know. That's a hard thing to balance and something I don't have an answer for.
Yeah. You know, and this is one of those things where, you know, this is something impacted by this shift to online. You know, there's been lag issues reported with stages in offline events. But when you put it in an online experience now that issue gets exacerbated.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if they would roll it back just for this year or just for online events. And then once we get to Capcom Cup, nope, you're playing on the stage of, or the blank of Destiny, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The kitchen of Destiny. You know, it's like in Kitchen Stadium with that old Iron Chef show.
Oh, yeah. Audience. A la cuisine.
That's...
Yeah. You know,
if you win, you get to bite a pepper.
Damn, dude. I always admire that host for biting peppers. But now I eat peppers raw, and they're pretty good. But... You guys remember when we had the Altamore patch and the game felt great online? I miss that. I really miss that. I have never played so much Street Fighter V than when I was playing with the Altamore patch. And it's sad that Capcom didn't take the low-hanging fruit of just using that. Granted, I don't know if there were issues with the patch. I don't know anything behind them. But yeah. Man, I remember seeing Ultra David play somebody from fucking the Middle East, and the connection was bearable.
You know how far back that feels?
It feels like it's
that was
years.
Also 2020.
Wait, was that 2020?
that patch was January 2020.
Good God. Where am I? When am I? Jesus Christ, that feels like, I honestly thought it was 2019, 2018.
Feels like it.
Different times back then.
This summer has been a year.
Man, every week feels like a year. But yeah, speaking of things and it being not in a timely manner and announcements right after our show. As of 7:31 p.m. last week, Central Time, immediately when I hit the go offline button, Capcom announced that that F-Champ is now banned from Capcom tournaments.
Yep, cool. This is
go ahead.
This is This is following to last week when F-Champ was banned from multiple events, including Big E events, ECT, and Combo Breaker, in response to him tweeting a picture of a watermelon with the hashtag Watermelon Lives Matter. We discussed that a bunch last week, but now Capcom has stepped in, so he is banned indefinitely. Not permanently, just indefinitely. From all tournaments and events operated by Capcom, including the Capcom Pro Tour and Street Fighter League. Now, granted, he hasn't earned a point on the CPT since 2018. His last big performance was at EVO 2018 when he got ninth, but has not been a regular fixture on the CPT in 2019. So it's doubtful this will have a meaningful effect on his plans for 2020.
Yep. I mean, you know, that's the decision they made. Great. Moving on. I really don't want to talk about that.
That's fair.
Oh, sorry. God damn it. I got to send Mike a new code. So, Steve, you stall for 30 seconds while I send Mike his code.
All right. I can talk a little bit about Animevo because not a whole lot to talk about yet. They did announce that they will be announcing more games soon. This is on top of the 24 that they announced just a couple weeks ago for their online anime Evo tournament series. Dates still to be determined, but they've had over 200 volunteers sign up to take part of this. So expect some big, big things. I would not be surprised if there was like some random Marvel or Tatsunoko versus Capcom added in there.
Anything is possible.
Just because.
Yeah. And if you guys weren't here, was it 2 weeks ago? We got to chat with one of the co-founders of Animevo. Speaking of founders, there's Mike.
DJ Cream.
Hold on. There we go. Sorry, I fixed it. Mike, you are now with us. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm not sure what I've ever founded, but I'll take it.
Yep. I didn't know how to make a good segue, so I just said whatever word I said before. But yeah.
You are a founding member of the Best of Three crew.
That is true. That is true.
There you go.
Before it was even Best of Three. What was it? The loadout.
The loadout. It was just an extension of another show.
we were talking earlier about how this is now Best of Five Season 5. So you were there for Season 1 of Best of 3. Technically now Season 1 of Best of 5. Whatever you want to call it. Cool. Do you have any thoughts about the F-Champ stuff? Before we move on from it, also, any chance you could move your camera down a little bit so you're higher in the frame? Sweet, thanks.
Probably nothing too creative. What he said was really dumb and really bad and insensitive. Kind of deserves what he has coming to him. At the same time, there is a question of inconsistency, and I'm sure you guys have already said all that. But yeah, I mean, he's an idiot. But they need to figure out a way to handle these issues that isn't ban people who are already retired and or ban themselves and not deal with people who are actually in the community right now. You know, it's all a little questionable. Mm-hmm.
I agree. Okay, let's move on.
Have they ever banned a white person?
I don't remember Sarah Blast's race off the top of my head. I'm sorry. I don't keep track of those things. I keep track of a lot of things on my spreadsheet. Player race is not one of them.
Yeah. Oh, guilty.
Okay. Well, just food for thought. Okay.
All
right. But yeah, not too much to say on it that hasn't already been said.
Right. Okay. Well, let's get to fun stuff. 2020 is saved. I don't know if you guys saw it. 2020 is now a good year because a giant announcement was made. I don't know if you guys saw the New Game Plus showcase that was shown off earlier today. But in this showcase, they announced that our favorite game, Fight of Crabs, is coming to Steam on July
30th. Yes!
Game looks cool.
There's new weapons.
That one looked like Raphael. Wow.
That's add intense. Fight Crab to Evo 2021, you cowards.
Kind of reminds me of Katamari Damacy.
Yeah,
but instead of rolling them up, you're hitting.
Chopping them down.
Yeah.
Yeah, this game looks insane. I can't wait for it to come out on Steam on July 30th so I can play it. Damn, look at that tornado move. That was sick.
Off topic, is there a way to get that to play in the thingy, the screenshot, if we have it on YouTube? I'm trying to talk and I can't. You know that screen we created where it's screen?
Yeah, I just forgot because I'm a dummy.
It's okay. It's episode 0 of season 5. We're in beta.
It's a rollout. It's a rollout of episode 0. But look, you have to pin the crab to win. But Fight Crab coming to Steam July 30th. I'm excited. This alone saves 2020 for me. And it should save 2020 for you as well. Alongside this, they also announced the new Sam Show character, which I have right here. Go for it.
I was just saying that I was talking about this the other week. I love this character because I love nameless grunt characters that just like look generic. They are totally my thing. And so this is who I would consider playing in this game.
Is this a crossover anyone was expecting?
Absolutely not.
I could
never have guessed.
Yeah, this is almost as crazy as the crossovers we're getting in Smash, which we'll get to in a little bit. But you know, it makes sense. You know, the Bushido code versus the Chivalry.
Is For Honor the one that was like the over-the-shoulder kind of game? Yeah.
It was basically Pokken, but with medieval people.
That was one of those games where like every year people think they're going to like make a fighting game scene out of something, but people just don't like getting too far out of the formula.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what that game was.
Yeah,
just a little too far out of the formula.
I did play the game for a while. Even competed at Final Round 2018, I think. No, 2017. You know, it was 2v2, which was interesting. My team wound up getting eliminated by the team of Kazunoko and Fudo. So they were killing it at this game, too. But anyway, there you go. He comes out tomorrow. You'll see available tomorrow for Samurai Showdown. You know what? The game was fun for a while. It had its problems, much like every other game, and the online sucked, much like every other fighting game. You know, it was still a fun game. I enjoyed the time I had with it. And seeing Sam Show is super neat.
I actually really enjoyed Sam Show. I think it's a little sad. Like, it had either the most fortunate or unfortunate release. depending on the way you put it, where it was insanely popular, probably more than it ever would have been due to its release for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Evo just like marked an early death for it, mm-hmm. that created a game that was extremely popular for like 2 months and then not after that. I thought it was really fun, and I thought like the better player usually won as long as they were playing, you know, a good character. The balance was atrocious at the time.
Right.
But it was a simple fighting game without too much to go outside the rules. But at the same time, the damage was so high and the pace was so fast that it was interesting despite being simple. So I thought they got that right, and I thought it felt kind of like what people liked about a lot of the old games like SF2. Where it's just like, oh yeah, I understand why he won that.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it one of those things where everybody just got bored with it, or is it just the unfortunate situation of every other game being out at the same time?
The online sucked. Evo was the biggest tournament that it was ever going to have, and so I think people kind of saw that. But Steve, you had something to say.
I was going to say it feels like we have this conversation where every game that isn't like in the top three, if it's not on the marquee, it's a dead game. It's a dying game.
Right.
I feel like we need to adjust our expectations a bit.
Of course.
You know, there's still going to be a dedicated scene for that, just like there's a dedicated scene for the plethora of games out there. Because how many viable fighting games are out there right now? I would argue more than at almost any other point in recent memory. So the fact that Sam Show is still going, that it's still receiving support, it's not just limping along. It's still there despite having like 7, 8, possibly even 10 solid competitors, depending on how you count them.
Very true.
It's cool they're still making it, and it's cool that licenses are being thrown around the way they are nowadays. Mm-hmm. I think it shows, you know, some developer camaraderie, and I think it's fun for players. So I see nothing bad about this, and I think the character looks cool.
Yeah, and I think For Honor still has a scene. I think it's a very different scene than from FGC stuff. But I do think they still have, like, a very active community.
I can believe that.
Yeah, I think they still run turn. I remember like stumbling across a Twitch channel where they were having a For Honor online tournament, and it looked super cool. And the commentators and the people playing seemed very excited about it. So, you know, if you're happy doing it, man, keep doing it. So
I mean, it appeals a lot to people who are like Dark Souls and like Demon Souls players who like the PvP in that. It's a much more fleshed out version.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not the same thing, but it's its own semi-genre.
Yeah. Let's get to more announcements. Arxis.
We do that,
go for it.
We got to thank Lord Dorkface subscribing to us for Twitch Prime.
Oh shit!
With Lord Twitch Dorkface. Prime, excuse me. So.
Thank you, Lord Dorkface.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. Sorry, we missed it. That was 4 minutes ago. I apologize. Arxis had a big presence at the New Game Plus showcase. They had a lot of non-fighting game titles on there, but they showed off some more Guilty Gear Strive stuff. No new characters, but they showed off Zato and Milia. There you go, Steve. I fixed it.
Ooh, yay.
This was basically just showing off some of the combos and stuff. I don't know if I notice anything different as far as the game systems, because I know they were talking about changing the Gatling systems and all this other stuff, but the Grime and the Oki and all the crazy shenanigans is back. These are some wild exchanges. I know they specifically showed like one of Millie's like knockdown setups towards the end.
And it's crazy how
No, I was just going to say her air dash is also like stupid fast for some reason.
It's crazy how cool this game looks when they turn off everything and then how horrible it looks when they turn it on. So hopefully, like, you know, the developers see that. Apparently they have. So, because I mean, I actually love the art style right now when there's no like gigantic numbers everywhere on the screen. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super unique. I think it looks like a weird, like the first truly next-gen fighting game, if we're calling, you know, PS4 the last one, even though I guess this is coming out for, is this PS4 or is this PS5?
Yeah, they noted PS4
it's
on the conference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I think it's...
Would not even be surprised if it was...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, would not be surprised if it was made cross-platform.
Yeah. Okay, here it is.
Basically, any game... Yeah.
Where did that hit? What the fuck?
It still has the startup, but it's actually like almost a boon in that situation where it lets you do the weird 50-50 with that thing. So, yeah. I hate this character. I've always hated this character.
In the world, I cannot wait to try her. I'm exactly in the opposite camp. But yeah, I'm excited for this game. I hope it comes out. I hope when it comes out, I'm still as excited for it. It is coming early 2021, and on the top right, you can see it says PlayStation 4. No PlayStation 5 announcement of any sort yet. But I'm excited for it, and I'm glad that they got to show off some of those characters. Go ahead, Steve.
Just to clarify, there are reports that are saying that any game released for PS4 from July onward must be built with backwards compatibility for PS5 in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be able to play. The details are still to be determined, but some way, shape, or form. It might be a little bit after launch, but you should be able to play this on PS5.
Yeah. There are a lot of games that are coming out that are PlayStation 4, and then they're planning on having like some sort of DLC so that it is tailored to the PlayStation 5 once it comes out. I know specifically the new Marvel Avenger games is having that, as well as Cyberpunk. But yeah. So, should be interesting. Part of me thinks that that's why the delay is there, is so they can tailor stuff to PlayStation 5. I could be completely wrong about that, as I'm sure I probably am. But there's a part of me that thinks that. Let's get to more announcement stuff, because we're quickly running out of time before Bestabon comes on. They announced the ARMS character in Smash. Was it yesterday morning? Or this morning?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was yesterday morning.
Yeah. We finally figured out who the new character is. And this character looks crazy.
I think the character looks cool. It was not who I wanted from the ARMS characters. I like several of them more than her. But I thought they did a good job putting an ARMS character in a Smash game from what we saw in the Direct.
Mm. Yeah, the character looks crazy.
Yeah, like you, instead of having special moves, you have like you use the second arm with the B button, so like you're controlling. They've definitely gone a little out there with some of the Smash Ultimate characters, which I appreciate.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. I think we've seen stuff. I think the first time we ever saw this was in Tekken, right? When Akuma came in, that was like the first time where it was like completely like different, where it was taking mechanics from their game and putting it into a new game. So it's cool to see that more games are doing it, because I think those are super cool. I am very appreciative that they put my ARMS main on there, on the Smash, and I'm gonna have to try it, even though I haven't played Smash in a long time. But yeah.
I don't know if they're doing like a balance patch with this or anything. It'd be interesting because their patches are so weird and like random and balanced for quick play rather than the competitive scene. So like sometimes these things shake things up, and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And we'll get to it a little bit later, but there were also other Smash news that didn't have to do with Ultimate, but go on, Steve.
I was saying the biggest thing is Min Min is a spirit in the game. So this was, for people who weren't excited about Min Min in particular, they still had something to take away from this, because this means that characters who are spirits right now still have a chance to get in. So, Geno fans, they're right back in the mix.
Yeah, I think the craziest thing about this new character is how she can, you can switch her right arm. Like you can switch the weapon. That's crazy.
Yeah, she has different weapons, and you can control. You can actually smash attack in two different directions, like, at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is something that, you know, seems like it's designed for a free-for-all, but may have some sort of use in the way we play competitive Smash. And it'll certainly be interesting in, like, doubles.
Yeah. I cannot wait to see how that character shakes out for real. It's going to be crazy.
It's really easy, especially if you're like a fighting game player looking at Smash from the outside, to distance yourself from just how many more people play Smash casually and for fun than do with any sort of competitive view in mind. So like, it's interesting sometimes watching Smash players' reactions to a trailer or something Sakurai says, because Sakurai will always talk about how, like, oh, you know, this is good in a 8-player match, and people get mad, but it's like, do you know why Smash exists? Like, I'm not even just like outside of the party game meme, I'm like, the reason you keep getting new Smash games that you enjoy playing is because they do this for all the people out there who just want to play for fun.
For sure. So. They also announced, speaking of crazy crossovers, they also announced a ton of other shit in the form of Mii Fighters. So let's check this shit out.
Should we do a block grab?
Okay, let's do a block grab like hella quick, because we have about 10 minutes. So as soon as they show the first one, there he is. Ninjara, I think that's his name. Block grab for Ninjara and Smash.
I'm gonna have to block, because it just feels weird having like the actual Min Min and then the weird Mii Fighter of this guy. Also, the Mii Sword Fighter has a Chakram, so why was he not a Sword Fighter instead of a Brawler? I mean, I guess like the Sword Fighter is a sword, you never had a sword, but I don't know. I think they messed that one up. I'm gonna block.
How about you, Steve? Ninjara, block rap.
Despite it not being Twintel, I think, you know, you gotta represent the series. So I'm gonna grab. Not for me, but I feel like it's a good add-on.
Gotcha. I'm a block. I don't like Ninjara. He's cheap.
I love Springman, I love Ribbon Girl, I love Twintel. I don't understand how the two characters they put in this game were this like standard ass ninja and then Min Min. Like who what? Someone saying Min Min's most popular character arms? There's no way Min, everyone loves Twintel, right? What? I don't know. Min Min's
lame. Maybe the circles you run with. Maybe the circles you run with love Twintel.
All right,
that might say more about the circles than you.
Yeah, it means they have good taste.
There's more Ninjara stuff.
The Ninjara is a brawler.
Yeah, that was bizarre. I was expecting like a long range character. Now this is some shit.
This one's interesting. I got a grab because it's Heihachi and it's cool, but like, how are some of the characters going to be like full redesigns of the Mii costume that look exactly like their in-game equivalents? And then Heihachi looks like I like spilled coffee on the controller during the Mii character fucking creation screen. Like this is like anyone could have made this in 5 minutes. Anyone on Earth. And then you look at like Cuphead and Sans and they're like models from a game. But I think it's hilarious anyway, so I'm still going to grab.
Steve, block grab on Heihachi.
Heihachi was also a character, a Mii costume, in Smash Wii U. I would have loved to see a different Tekken character.
Yeah, that's true.
So, although I appreciate the Tekken representation, I got a block.
Yeah, I didn't know he was there for Tekken Wii U, so I'm a block. Too much reusing assets. All right, let's move on to the next one. The Splatoon lady.
These ones are a little creepy looking.
They are a little scary, huh?
I'm not feeling this. Wait, where'd her leg go? Oh, it's covered by the gunner thing. Okay, I was scared for a second.
I saw it too. Oh, shit. All right, block grab on the Splatoon.
These are the DJs? The mouths are weird, man. They're like the hosts kind of a Splatoon 2.
Yeah.
Put some respect on the name of the Squid Sisters. if you don't play these characters with Calamari Incantation playing in the background, you are doing this wrong. This is an absolute grab. Absolute grab.
Now, do they have the Squid song in Smash yet? Can you play that song, like the Kid Squid song? You know what I'm talking about from the commercial? You're a kid, you're a squid, you're a kid, you're a squid.
Actually, I don't think I've heard that one. That's really funny, though.
Oh, that should definitely be a Smash background song.
Oh, all right. Yeah, you know what? I'll grab, I guess, just to not get on Steve's bad side.
Good move.
They look terrible. Sorry.
I don't disagree. They look really scary. All right. Let's get to the next one. And this, I think, blew everyone away.
They're guaranteed to have one out of left field every time now.
Yeah, but
And here we go. This is way out of left field.
They did a really good, it looks like his own character. Like, they gave him his own gun or whatever, and, like, the animations line up with it pretty well. I was pretty impressed by this. Like, he really looks like his own character in the game.
Yeah, it's like what you were saying with the Heihachi costume. It just looks like it was so crumbled together. And then they have this.
Like, if you put a weird move that, because people don't know what Meat Gunner does. So, like, if you put a trailer as if he was a new character, people would believe it. That's how different he looks from a Meat Fighter. Yeah. So, pretty interesting.
Sure. All right, Black Rab on Vault Boy from Fallout 4, or Fallout in general.
I'll grab it. It's fun. It's like a really weird pick. Like, it's from a different series than you would expect, and it's not someone that actually... It's like, Vault Boy isn't even a real thing. It's just like a piece of propaganda in the game. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that they made him a character.
I gotta go grab. It would be a grab just based on the character itself, but it's a super grab. It's an instant grab with the dog meat reference.
In that, what was the dog meat reference? I didn't even see it. Oh, there you go. Okay, yeah, that's funny.
That was. Mwah. I gotta borrow this from Ultra David.
Look, I'm gonna grab just because it gets us one step closer to even wackier Smash characters. Give me.
Yeah, they said another five. They said there's definitely gonna be another five.
Let's see.
So it's Dylon, Geno, Dylon, and Dylon. There's your
Geno,
five.
Spoiler Geno alert. Is truly like. There may not be a bigger group of head cases on the earth than the Geno for Smash people. This is like a weird, boring side character from a game with like infinitely better characters everywhere. I don't think there is a character that doesn't have better dialogue than Geno. And he's just like what? Why? Would Geno as Geno as a Mii costume would piss people off more than it would make them happy, right?
Very true. Very true.
But I think that might happen.
See, the beautiful part is all of those crazy Smash fans who are obsessed with getting their character in, they had something to pull away from this weekend. Because, you know, if you're a Geno fan, you have the fact that ghosts or spirits are eligible to be characters. Mm-hmm. If you're a Goku fan, Sakurai mentioned Vegeta by name during the direct.
I was just
so
they got
you
the...
have
Well, they got the. It's because they're talking about the voice actor, though.
Don't bring facts into this.
See, Frog is actually a cool character. Frog is much cooler than Geno. I like Super Mario RPG much more than I like Chrono Trigger, but I prefer Frog to Geno.
Yeah, you know what? I just want. You know what? Put Resident Evil in there. Give me a Jill Valentine or a Leon. That's what I want.
Well, we saw the new Resident Evil trailer a couple weeks ago, or whatever. And it had like Chris and the dude, Ethan. That's
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's everybody fighting together as they do in the Super Smash Brothers world. Lots of fighting. fighting around the world. Those are all the reveals. I think all of them.
The Mii costumes always make me laugh because, like, I played a lot of Smash, and to be fair, since like the Mii's have come out, you know, I've been in my 20s. You know, I'm not playing with elementary schoolers anymore. But I've never seen someone pick a Mii, really. Like, ever. Like, I think people buy these just to have them in their collection. But no one wants to play the Mii. No one wants to sit next to the kid who plays the Mii. So, it's just weird.
Yeah. I've never played a Mii character, so I'm right there with you.
All I want is for Geno to be the next character. Because, like you mentioned, there's going to be 5 more characters in this season. I want Geno to be named, but I want the trailer to be Sakurai just sitting on a chair. It's fucking Geno. Shut the fuck up. Smash logo. Like 10 seconds. That's really it. Well, that's actually all you need.
He says it in English, too, on top of everything. That'd be pretty dope. I think we covered everything. Oh, they also announced a bunch of Neo Geo Color games are coming to the Switch. And that's the old, like, Neo Geo handheld system. So if you want 8-bit versions of games that you can play in 16 or 32-bit, you now have the option via the Switch. Right. Via Neo Geo Color. And last but not least, I think the last item on our list here is that DBFZ, Dragon Ball FighterZ, has reached 5 million copies sold. Right. Is that right? 5 million copies sold?
Yes.
Yep, crosses 5 million sales worldwide. So, shout-outs to DBFZ, still moving units. And, oh, Neo Geo Pocket Color, that was the name of it. Sorry, not the Neo Geo Color. I apologize. But yeah, DBFZ, 5 million sales. Good shit.
One other quick note. Through June 25th, so through Thursday, you have the chance to download Injustice 1 for free through PS4, Xbox Live, or PC. Mm-hmm. So if you want to mess around in that game, you've got a couple days to pick that up.
Gotcha.
For
all right,
the price of free $99.
It's always worth it. All right, Mike, somebody asked, you weren't here for it, but we discussed it a little bit. What were your thoughts of the CPT stuff from this weekend?
Okay, so let me clear a few things up. Was there any money in that tournament? No, it was just a qualifier.
No.
So they had the easy opportunity to make it only available to people who hadn't qualified. That's an argument. People have talked about, like, you know, banning already qualified players from the Pro Tour, but they need a way to practice too. So I haven't ever been on board with that. I think in this situation, I don't think IDOM should have DQ'd like that, but at the same time, it is an unfortunate scenario where, like, even people not known to complain were saying, yeah, this guy's connection is that bad. And that sucks. I don't know what you do about that when the games – my cats are fighting right behind me. When the games online suffers that much from a bad connection, I think – the chat log makes it look like IDOM had the opportunity to try something else and didn't. Obviously, the grid should not be banned. It's stupid. Horrible idea. Obviously, you should not DQ yourself in the later rounds of the tournament. It's a dick move. I think not so obviously banning people from these online CPT tournaments who have already qualified is kind of up in the air. But this certainly makes a case for it if they're not going to try. Overall, he shouldn't have let his pride get to him to that point. If you're going to lose because of lag, no one's going to judge you that hard. You're the CPT champ. Just make a tweet about it later and play the match. So that's how I feel. But I don't think he should see any repercussions or anything. It's frustrating enough, and I understand it enough to where it's like, that does suck. And maybe they should figure out a way to deal with people who are that laggy.
Go for it, Steve.
I've got one bit of breaking news. Evil Geniuses has released Chris G from their team. This just came a few minutes ago. They said, quote, "We at EG value each member of our community and have zero tolerance for harassment. After investigation, it was evident that Chris's statements, though made in 2017, continue to have real harmful impact on our community." So Chris G, no longer a part of Evil Geniuses. We'll probably have more on that later next week.
Interesting.
I don't disagree with that. It's an interesting way to phrase it, that they have zero tolerance, but waited until now.
But yeah, very true. It's very true.
Whatever.
All right. We have to move on. Besteban is here with us, so unfortunately we do have to say goodbye to our own Michael Danka Schiller. Mike, any parting words before we say goodbye?
Evo is coming up. It's not going to be the same, but let's stick through it and let's make it fun. All right.
Later. Let's make it fun, he says. See you later, Mike. All right, and ladies and gentlemen, on the call with us, finally, is the man of the hour, Esteban the Besteban Martinez.
Hello. How are you?
That was a sick transition. That was a real sick transition, I gotta say.
Yeah, it's a best of five, season five, baby. We're pulling out all the stops, including the guest choice. Esteban, I have to be honest with you.
That's never followed by anything good.
Yeah, I've tricked you to be here because I just wanted to get you on a public forum to say fuck you to your face because you eliminated me from my first ever local tournament at the Temple Sessions. So, fuck you.
I did, huh?
Yeah.
Suck.
It does. It really does.
That was the correct response, by the way.
No, honestly, I will never forget it. You blew up my scrubby Ibuki with your Ryu, and I was so upset on the entire bus ride to Westchester home.
I'm glad that I've been leaving lasting impact since way that far back.
Yeah, and I figured that was something you wouldn't remember, so I wanted to bring it up. You're just correct. To get that off my chest, because that's been boiling in there for, I think that was in 2014, so it's been 6 years.
God.
Jesus.
God, yeah, that was a lifetime ago at this point.
It feels like it. Oh, man. All joking aside, Besteban, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Glad to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. We're gonna talk about docs. We're going to talk about all this other stuff. But first, before we get to that,
yes.
When I lived in Philly and I was getting into the fighting game community, I would go to Big E events, I would go to Temple Sessions, I would do all this other stuff. I've always seen the Hold Back to Block logo. I've always seen Hold Back to Block shirts. What in the world is Hold Back to Block?
Hold Back to Block is, well, it's changed. It's changed since then, but it currently is right now. It's a place where I do... It's a home for documentaries on fighting game community, like the fighting game community, fighting games. It's a place for documentaries and features, and it's a whole channel built around kind of looking at the legacy and future of the community and the genre itself.
Yeah, because I also remember you put out a lot of FGC moments at the time,
yes.
Right? I remember you had the one that specifically sticks out in my mind was when Urien got announced at CEO. Where you just put a camera on L.I. Joe going crazy.
Yep.
I think, were you also there for, was it Tommy Guns beating Crack Fiend at Absolute Battle?
Or was no, that was. Else?
Okay.
Yeah, another one that people would know is Hungry Box hitting the TV.
Oh, right.
That's me as well.
Right.
I'd put the camera and find some cool stuff.
Man, so you've been doing, I know you've been doing a lot of videography production work around the FGC for a long, long time. I know you've worked with Cross Counter for a bit. I used to work with Cross Counter as well. And now you're known for making these crazy, amazing documentaries. We were talking about some of them earlier, like the Road to King of the Iron Fist, the Rise of the FGC. And most recently, you got to release Fight On, which I got to rewatch today, the Killer Instinct documentary, and it is very good. It's amazing.
Thank you.
I really thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm someone who sometimes doesn't enjoy documentaries, but I sat through it, and 2 hours flew by, and I didn't even realize it. I have a couple questions for you about it. First, why do a documentary on Killer Instinct? Right? Because I feel like you've been working on this for quite a while now, especially with some of those interviews. So why Killer Instinct?
9 months of my life, essentially. I've been working on that Damn. Thing. Probably even longer. Like when I restarted Hold Back the Block maybe a year ago after spending a lot of time away because I was doing a lot of commercial work, a lot of stuff in the scene, a lot of Bandai Namco, Capcom, stuff like that. And I came back with a renewed focus after working with a group called Noclip. Noclip does a lot of great gaming documentaries on kind of mainstream games, like things like Fallout and stuff like that. I worked with them for a little bit, kind of took a little bit of what I learned there and brought it to fighting games. So I had this focus of like doing like, you know, hunting down and investigating stories and people and all that kind of stuff in fighting games. And Killer Instinct was always a story I was fascinated by because it is such an interesting story, like even like in development. Like, development of Killer Instinct is fascinating. If you've seen the doc, you know what happens, but, like, that is a game that lost its developer 1 year into a season one. Like, it was even, like, one of the first games to even do, like, a seasonal novel. So the story had always been fascinating, and it was something I was always going to cover, like, sometime further down the road, like, when Hold Back the Block got a little bit bigger. But then the whole Bring Back KI movement kind of started, and I had chats with Max, I had chats with Rick, Thyher, and a whole bunch of people. And I was like, all right, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this now. And that's kind of why I wasn't even a KI player. I'm still not a KI player, really. That's kind of what started me kind of going down the road and putting this together.
Yeah, you might not be a KI player, but now you're a KI expert. Like, you're a KI historian.
A little bit.
You know more about KI than the KI player.
I know too much about KI. Like, it's just like random facts come out. Like, I'm like, be walking around the house. I'm like, did you know this? I'm like, who am I even talking to?
Man, so you said this has been something you've been actively working on for 9 months. So is it serendipity that the timing of the Bring Back KI movement started happening and then it got announced for Evo? Was that just complete coincidence?
I think it was more the announcement of Evo, because Bring Back KI is what got me to really kind of accelerate things. I was like, okay, this is what we do. But I didn't expect it to get like, I mean, there's a lot of things I didn't expect about this year to happen, mm-hmm. but I didn't expect that to happen, like to kind of come out. And that kind of accelerated plans. Like, I think I was sitting around thinking about releasing around Combo Breaker, and then Combo Breaker didn't happen. I also helped with the Combo Breaker retrospective, so I got really busy with that. And then I was like, when am I going to put this out? And then it gets announced for Evo, and I'm like, all right, so this is where, in this general time frame, is where I'm going to put it out. And so, you know, it was nice. It was nice that it got announced before I, like, started rendering stuff, so I can kind of throw it in the outro a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just weird timing. I'm really lucky like that.
Yeah, you are. Now, which is why you won that one set 6 years ago.
Wow.
Kind
of building off it.
No, you all actually... Right. Since I, go, Steve.
Since Alon needs some time to regather himself, let me ask you, the sure. response to this, it's been out for like 2 weeks, a little under 3 weeks. It's yeah. already at about 150,000 views. It's one of your most popular videos you've done on the site. Yeah. Are you surprised at the response for this?
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised. I knew it would do well. Like, to kind of explain the structure of like Hold Back the Block, it's there's no ads. We don't run any ads, or I don't run any ads and videos. It's all 100% patron funded through my Patreon, and some people give me donations, stuff like that. So I don't really look at the views, really. Like, if one person likes it or like 1,000 people like it, it's great. Hopefully they become patrons and help me do more. But I did not expect this thing. Like, I checked the charts. Like, it's gotten me to look at YouTube backend stuff and like check like audience reception and charts and all that kind of stuff a lot more, because like it just doesn't seem to be stopping, which is like alarming, because I don't know where people are coming from to watch this video. But it's done way better than I thought, which makes me hopeful for more stuff, because this was an interesting project in that it was a project that was supposed to be a lot smaller than it was. Like, it was going to interview maybe like 7 or 8 people, and then everybody wanted to talk about KI, and then Microsoft heard I was doing it, and I thought they were going to like shut it down. But they're like, no, here's 4 people to talk about for the project, and all, like, so everybody wanted to talk about Killer Instinct. So I'm happy that it's done as well, and I'm happy that all these people that trusted me with this story, because there's a lot of different pieces to juggle, really dug it, and you know, no one felt like I did a disservice to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that you covered in your doc was how the community, like, really banded around this game, right? So having the community see something that is made with so much love, given back to them like that, I think is something that's super meaningful for a lot of people. I have a question, though. when I was watching this, one thing that really stuck with me was the whole topic of how they used the silicon imaging stuff.
Yes.
Which is like how they rendered all the characters in Rareware games, which is also the same technology that they used for Jurassic Park and shit. So yeah, that stuck with me, and I think it will stick with me for a while because I had no idea that was even the case. So in your journey covering or creating this documentary, was there anything that like really took you by surprise when you were doing the research for it or when you were interviewing somebody?
It was the Buffy the Vampire stuff. The Buffy the Vampire Slayer stuff. Because I found out, like, I had heard about the engine that they had worked on and all this kind of stuff. And that was definitely going to be something I followed up on in, like, line of questioning and stuff like that. But I remember talking to James Goddard, was my point of contact at Microsoft. He's the one that reached out to see what I was doing and see if he could help anyway. And he said something about the Slayer engine. And I was like, that's like a weird name to name an engine. Like, usually they're things like Hex and stuff like that. So I was like, what's Slayer engine? So I looked up, you know, what the Collective was, what they did, Double Helix as well, and I was like, type in Slayer engine. And there's a great guide or wiki on Moby Games, I believe is the website, and they had a list of all the things that this engine had powered. And it was like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and like Mark Echo's Getting Up and the Green Lantern game, like this whole legacy to it. And I was like, this is fascinating, and why are there not more people talking about this? Because another part of the goal of Hold Back the Block is kind of to humanize development, fighting game development. I feel like we lack a bit of that in our community, and to show just how difficult it is to make fighting games, and like the trials and tribulations of making them. So like, I was fascinated by the story of like, okay, how do they turn this like weird 3D brawler that was licensed and based on like one of my favorite shows, and how do we get from there to Killer Instinct? And that was like the core, one of the really core aspects of the story that they really wanted to hit.
Yeah. Yeah. That is hella wild. From Buffy to Killer Instinct.
Yep.
Damn. What else did I want to ask? Damn it. Hold on. I accidentally exited out of my doc.
Sorry.
Go for it, Steve.
So let me jump in. You know, you talked about learning so much about, you know, about this game and those stories about those things that humanize development. Was there something that you weren't able to include in this doc that you really, really wanted to?
God, there was a 40-minute longer cut of this documentary, maybe.
Oh, God.
Or so before I launched it. around the time I put out the trailer, like, so like 2 weeks before I launched it, the original cut was like 2 hours and 20 minutes long. And there was just a lot of stuff that cut for pacing, or it just didn't have the time to really kind of like work it out. So there's a ton of stuff. Like, there's a bunch of community stories. There's a bunch of developmental stories as well that just didn't make the final. But I was able to kind of include the core stuff they wanted to. Like, I think the hardest thing to talk about, because it still affects a lot of people to this day, is the Double Helix, losing Killer Instinct. Like, that was even hard to get them to talk about on camera, like Bao and Brandon and stuff like that. Like, they it still kind of is with them even to this day, like 7 years later. Like, they worked so hard in this thing for a year, less than a year, and they put all their energy into it, and then have it can take it away. Was something that was like really, I try to do my best to translate that in a way, but also in the interview process, not like hammer them about it because it's still pretty raw. But there's also a lot of things like I have a whole 30-minute like side video that I'm working on right now about Infill's Guide. Like, I sat down with him. He's obviously in the documentary, but I also sat down with him and we talked for a good long while about what it took to build that guide. And, you know, he didn't get any money for anything like that. So, like, you know, the passion that let him keep going, even though like it was like a lot of pressure and a lot of struggle. And like, you know, people look at the guide as like the Bible, right? The KI Bible. What if something's wrong? And how does he react to that and all that kind of stuff? So there's a lot of little personal stories, and that's why over the next couple of months, we're releasing kind of like one shots of KI stuff, similar to like the Talking Netcode video I did with Keats. Mm-hmm. So we'll get some of that stuff in there.
Yeah. No, and I found it super interesting, you getting Keats to talk about netcode stuff, because I think, what was it? It was him and Mike Z were both working with Iron Galaxy at the time.
Yes.
Granted, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Double Helix released it with some rollback netcode.
Yes. Okay. They had their version of, I think Max said in one of his interviews that actually Tony came in to consult at some point. One of the candidates came in to come and consult at one point to kind of just verify. But they did have GGPO in the original season one, and then Iron Galaxy took that and improved it further in later seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Iron Galaxy saving the world.
Yeah. And like the funny thing about that netcode talk is it's kind of connected to the Melee announcement yesterday.
Yeah.
In a roundabout way where Jazz Fizzy, the developer of Slippy, reached out to me when that video came out and was like, hey, I've been thinking about working on this thing that I can't really talk about. Can you connect me to Keats? Because I really like your netcode video. So like way back, like months ago, I had them connect and talk. And you know, he put out a tweet today saying that without this video, there would not be rollback netcode.
Damn. So you saved Melee.
Yes, I've done it. It's me. Your savior has arrived. I did no work whatsoever outside of some editing of a video. Ignore the guy who actually programmed
for 7 months.
Yeah. Don't worry about him. It's me, your savior.
It's all about Esteban Martinez. The only name you need to know for Smash.
Please leave me alone.
you mentioned working on some other one shots, some other projects. Do you have sort of a white whale project? Is there something where you're like, okay, if I had infinite money and time wasn't necessarily a pressing thing, I could go after this story?
I've been thinking about this lately. Probably Smash. Like, probably talking to Nintendo about the history and origins and development of the Smash series. I think Nintendo doesn't have a lot of like historical documentaries on them, at least not done by them. But I'm always fascinated about like their design philosophies. I think one E3, I think it might have been when they were announcing Super Mario Maker, they had like Miyamoto and a few other folks like looking at like old design specs for like the original Super Mario Brothers, stuff like that. And that fascinates me because there is some secrecy behind like Nintendo. Like they're obviously like in that, they're like the Disney of video games, I would say. Like they're very protective of their image. They're very protective of the properties and all this kind of stuff, for better or worse. But I would love to go into Smash, like similar to what I did with KI, like go into Smash in terms of how it came together. I think, you know, even on Sakurai mentioned on that direct yesterday that they were planning to do like final Smashes in the N64 version and stuff like that. So like stuff like that fascinates me and sort of intertwine it with how big the game has gotten today with its community. So that would be like the big dream project. Who knows if that'll ever happen, or who knows if I have to do a version of that like without like Nintendo support, like Nintendo like being able to talk to them or anything like that. But I think like part of the reason why we don't run ads or we don't like, you know, commercialize the work at Hold Back the Block is so we can do stuff like that. There is no like there's no limiting factor or anything like that. Like we can just tell the story the way it needs to be told, the way it should be told, without like searching for like clickbait or all that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping if I can do more stuff like the Killer Instinct project, maybe we'll get to do stuff like that one day.
Whoops, I clicked the wrong button. That was cheesy.
That was cool.
I'm still getting used to stuff. But on that same vein about about maybe not getting to interview who you want. Was there anybody in this KI documentary that you wanted to interview that you just didn't get the opportunity to? Or
I think I got everybody I wanted to. I think. I'd have to. There's so many people. I interviewed 18 people. We interviewed Ripped as well, but I lost this interview due to like the hellish soundscape that is the esports arena in SoCal. But we got. I have 17 interviews and over 34 hours of like interview footage. So I think I interviewed too many people actually. Like there's Nikki is only in the doc for like 30 seconds, which is like I feel bad, but like everyone was competing for time. So I tried to make sure everybody got like their spot. I think if I were to, I have like some extra stuff from Ken Log And I kind of want to expand that like original KI, like KI 1 and 2 development part. And so I want to talk to more folks from Rare. I know that somebody from Rare actually really likes the doc. And we were chatting a little bit on Twitter recently about maybe seeing if we can find some of the old team and start to talk to them remotely. So I think I have more people I want to talk to now after doing the documentary. So it's kind of like reverse. But I got everybody I wanted. So I got more than I needed to.
That's awesome. And Rare. To get everybody you want to interview, no pun intended. No pun intended. Now,
I basically did the same joke in the voiceover for the first voiceover. So it's fine.
Okay, let's talk about sandwiches. That seems to be like the big takeaway from this video. How do you look at sandwiches differently now?
I don't, because I question more the sanity of Sejam and the sandwiches that he's eating, because I don't think he's ever seen a sandwich before, but it worked for the metaphor.
Right. Did you feel bad about
you know,
go for it.
Having watched Combo Breaker 2019 and all of those ads he did, I can assure you he has seen a sandwich. At least one.
So actually, I was in charge of that shoot. Actually, I sent Phil Nolan and him over to Portillo's, and I just gave him the instructions of just order a bunch of food and like have him comment on it and just eat stuff, and those will be the stingers. I actually had a funny joke of like, if Combo Breaker had happened this year, we're going to do the same thing, but like sit hit him at the table and he would like try to run away from the sandwiches. Like, I can't do any more, bros. I can't do it. And like just yell at him off camera, you gotta eat it, and just cut to like commercial break. So hopefully we get to do that one day.
Bam. Save it for 2021. Did you feel bad about having to butcher a sandwich while making that analogy though?
So I did like a little director's commentary stream for charity like last week, and because everyone was like, I can't believe he wasted food. I can't believe he wasted the sandwich. How dare he? But what I did was actually, so like my table's like back here-ish somewhere, and I'd set everything up with lights and stuff like that, and I'd put a towel actually on the floor, and I had chucked the sandwich like in a way where it looked like I just threw it across the room, but I threw it across the room, but I hit the towel. That was actually my lunch. Like, I actually broke everything down. I ate that sandwich. so I took extra care to not get it everywhere because I was hungry.
Dang. So the sandwich is not only a metaphor, but also lunch.
That's right.
That's
putting your sustenance on the line. That is dedication to your art.
Hey man, it's guerrilla filmmaking. I have like this space to work with. I can't go outside or something like that. We got to do what we got to do.
So on that same vein for food, you also listed caffeine as one of your special thanks.
Yes.
So how much caffeine was involved?
Probably the human allowance. Daily.
Did you feel the caffeine limit?
Oh yeah, like you know, it was either I was going to die or go Super Saiyan. Like it was one of those two things that were about to happen. Thankfully, the Stacy's Pita Chips also helped me bring, like, it leveled things out. It brought it down.
Hell yeah. One of my final questions here, unless Steve has anything else after me, but I did want to ask, on the opposite vein of all this, what was the absolute most challenging part of putting this documentary together? I know you had talked about like you were worried about the reception, or not worried about the reception, but you wanted to do right by its community and by all this other stuff, and how everything just kind of snowballed into this huge project. So having something with so many moving parts, I'm super curious, like, was there anything that was like your worst fucking nightmare to have to deal with and to have to muddle through?
I think like it wasn't like a horrible nightmare, but like it was making sure that the story was right. In terms of, we have three different development houses. We have Double Helix, we have Iron Galaxy, we have Microsoft. We also have, you know, Ken's experience with the older games, and then we have, you know, Rare and everybody there that has done stuff as well, like with the original games. And then we have the community as well. Like there's a whole other side to the community, you know, to the point where like some people would not talk to me about balance changes because like they're still mad about balance stuff like that. So it was making sure that we got the development story right, which was I'm infinitely thankful to James Goddard at Microsoft because I sent him stuff and he like didn't even blink. The Microsoft guys were super cool. Like I was actually super worried about like having, because we try to be like hands off with development houses, not give anybody like, you know, review cuts or anything like that. So when I brought to James, like, hey, I'm having somebody said this, can you help me like piece this all together? And he went back and he grabbed emails and all this kind of stuff. And he was able to help me. Okay, this is the timeline. This is this. This is this. This is this. So that helped me tremendously. And they were super cool with like helping me out because they wanted to see this do good. Everybody at the team, like both with Microsoft, Double Helix, Iron Galaxy, everybody wanted this to do well. So everybody came out to help me. Everyone gave me their time. And then on the development side, but also to the community side to also represent that as well, not like sugarcoat it or not be biased. Like that Keats section where he talks about you know, the difficulties with balancing games and the reception, you know, there's a lot of bias there, like both, you know, with him as well as like the people that were kind of coming out against him and stuff like that. So it's really important for me to remain as neutral as I could, look at the evidence in front of me in terms of like, you know, I went through ultracombo.com for like 2 days and like think I read everything and I never want to see a forum again. Like going through like tweets and all this kind of stuff and kind of really, you know, put the story out there and not also not put anybody on blast. Like I wasn't a KI player. I wasn't the community. So I'm not trying to put specific people on blast for especially people I don't know. But how can we best represent the story without bias as somebody that I'm here and as somebody like, you know, as it's being, the story is being told to. So I think those were like really challenging parts and also managing the length. Like this is one of the longest things I've ever done. I think it is the longest documentary I've ever really done. And, you know, even adding an additional 5 minutes or taking 5 minutes or 2 minutes or anything like that, like those are really tough choices in the edit and you have to sit there and you have to watch it. I think I watched this thing at least 4 times a day or something like that. Like even when it was like in the longest, it's longest like 2-hour and 20-minute version. And it's a lot of like internal gut checks of what you think is good and what you think will shine and all that kind of stuff. And only one other person really watched it before I started putting B-roll in it. And that was Rick. Cause he was close enough to the story where he could kind of verify a lot of things and tell me what he would think would be missing or can be taken out, but not too close where like he was like actually developing the game or anything like that. So that was it, and the rest was on me. So it was a lot of kind of making sure the story shines through, making sure you're trying to remain as neutral as possible and that you get it accurate, and also kind of checking yourself as an editor to make sure it's good.
How are you? Last question, what's next? I know you talked about the Smash stuff. Is there anything else that you're hungry to get working on now that, or is it going to be vacation time?
No, it's not vacation time. There is no vacation time because I think if I sit at my couch and look at the ceiling for another day, it would just be horrible consequences. I started working on like the next 4 videos today, I think. Yeah. Or yesterday, today, kind of like just the logistical stuff. But like, yeah, we got something with. I did a couple of videos with like Gerald and Emily, like Gerald of Core Gaming and Emily of Equinox. I have another one of those with Wooly Wools, who's a Let's Player. He used to be a formerly Super Best Friends. Now he has a channel called Wooly Versus. Does a lot of Let's Plays, but incorporates a lot of fighting games into it. So did doing a small feature on him. We might be doing some, or I might be doing some like stuff on Slippy and like just like kind of general melee tech that's been used to kind of keep the game going, you know, 20 years after it's released. So that's something like there. I have the info video for Killer Instinct as well as a bunch of other Killer Instinct supplemental material. So there's a lot of stuff. I also have another like full length doc on GDQ, which will be like the first like non fighting game thing I do for Back to Block as well. Mm-hmm. That I'm working on.
Yeah, that is awesome. And what is the best way for people to support what you do at Hold Back to Block? Where should people
go? The best way to support the best thing you can do is watch the videos and share them and tell your friends about them. You can watch them at youtube.com/holdbacktoblock. You can follow me at twitter.com/thebestofon, or you can follow the Hold Back to Block account at twitter.com/holdbacktoblock. And if you really like everything that I'm doing, you can support me at patreon.com/holdbacktoblock. I try to do a lot for patrons. I give them a bunch of early cuts. Like I think I had shared that Agano's segment from the documentary, like, a month after I filmed everything. So they got really early looks to kind of watch everything as I was making it. So yeah, patreon.com/holdbacktoblock. I know times are tough, so I don't expect people to like throw a tons of money at the screen, but if you can offer like a little bit, it's better than nothing. But yeah, just, you know, follow the channel, watch the videos, and spread the word.
Word to that. Steve, anything else?
No, I got some ideas for a 30 for 30 that if I have $1 million, I'm commissioning you on. But we'll talk about that off screen.
Sure.
All right. Well, our time
I really hope you have that $1 million.
I hope I have that $1 million.
Alrighty, well, that is our time. Esteban, I want to thank you again for coming on. This has been a long time coming. I'm glad I finally got to relinquish the weight off of my shoulders of losing to you in Philly 6 years ago. And I'm also very happy you came on.
Do that for you.
Dude, it's been great. I feel great. I'm also super happy we got to chat about this documentary because I've been playing a lot of Killer Instinct recently, and I didn't grow up with it, so I completely missed the boat on it. So getting to see this doc and getting even more immersed in it has been super amazing, and I'm very glad you took the time to chat with us a little bit about it.
I'm very thankful for being on here. Thanks for having me.
Word. We will chat with you some other time, sir.
All right. Take care.
Goodbye. Steve, this has been the season 5 launch of Best of 5.
It's been fun. Before we go, special thanks to Grown Up Mike for 23 months in a row.
Thank you, Grown Up Mike. Much appreciated. I think we missed a couple of topics, but we can come back next week and chat some more. Right? We're not going
to. We'll definitely be talking about that Chris G stuff too. Once again, EG, Evil Geniuses, releasing Chris G with immediate effect during our show, related to comments he made on Facebook back in 2017. So we'll have more on that next week.
Yeah, we got to let it develop because we don't have opinions on it without the facts. But all right, I have been Elon. That has been Steve. Earlier, we had Mike Dacaschiller on. And again, special thank you to Esteban for coming on. Go watch Fight On or any of his other documentaries. They're truly, 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 truly worth watching. It's nice to see somebody cataloging the shit we're doing in the FGC. So, always a blast. Am I missing anything? I feel like I'm forgetting something.
Ultra Chen's got a special episode. They've got some black members of the FGC coming on to share their stories about being black in the FGC. So we should turn it over to them.
Okay, then go watch Ultra Chen. Go support Black Lives Matter. Go support everything that needs supporting. Times are rough, but we're always here. So thank you, everybody, and we'll catch you all next week. I punched my microphone.
Good night, Canada.